Welcome to Unfiltered Studios, your one-stop destination for a diverse range of podcasts that cater to every interest. Join St. Joe on Nailed It as he explores the fascinating times of the 80s and 90s. Find solace in the advice of a mother on Petals of Support. Dive deep into intriguing interviews on The Sleevey G Show. Catch up with the latest in sports on Unfiltered Sports Weekly. Connect with your spiritual side on Finding Your Way. Achieve mental wellness with Hypno-Wellness. Never forget the history of everyday items with The Stupid History Minute. Understand how we've become the people we are today on How to Be Less of an Asshole. And gather with fellow movie enthusiasts on Movie Lovers Unite. Your journey into the world of podcasts begins here at Unfiltered Studios. Subscribe now and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com for more information.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. Today, I have a very special guest with me. I have my friend Don from the Multiverse of Geekdom channel. We're going to be talking about Eminem's Marshall Mathers LP. This album was hands down one of my favorite albums that came out in 2000, and it was ahead of its time. This is the peak Eminem coming right out of the gate. So with further ado, let's go on ahead. Let's discuss Marshall Mathers LP. I just want to point this out. This is hands down one of my favorite albums. I remember in ninth grade, I was going into the ninth grade, I think, at the time.
What year did this actually come out?
2000.
2000? So I just graduated, probably.
Yeah, and get this, man. It came out in May 23rd of 2000, to be exact.
So I was getting ready to graduate. Yeah, wow. Holy shit.
But get this, though. Me, who was transitioning into from junior high to now being a freshman in high school. Get this, my very first introduction to Eminem was My Name Is, but what really caught my attention was the Real Slim Shady single from this one. And that's what made me want to buy it. And so anyways, I remember my mom watching the news, and of course I'm reading my Entertainment Weekly, and it's the same Entertainment Weekly magazine that featured Eminem on the cover of the magazine with a censored, the censored thing over his face, and basically just being way too controversial. My mom's like, "You better not be listening to that Eminem stuff," and I'm like, "I won't. I'm good." Your
mom sounds like Cartman, but that's fine.
I don't know. That's like the closest thing I could get. But, you know, she's like, "You better not be listening to that." I said, "I won't, Mom, I promise." Next thing I know, I got my grandmother riled up enough to go out to the record store to buy this album. Because I'm like, awesome. My mom doesn't want... Yeah, she's like... I was like, "Yeah, my mom doesn't want me to listen to this." Why? Why doesn't she want you to listen to it? Because she doesn't want me to listen to anything with profanity in it. But yet I was allowed to watch rated R movies, which doesn't make any sense. But she says, "Well, what's the worst you're going to hear? Shit, ass, bitch." She goes, "That's it. I'm pissed off. We're going to the record store." So we walked 3 blocks away where a Strawberries record store is in East Boston. And I got my Eminem album.
Yeah, I mean, this was a weird time, especially for me as a hip-hop fan, because I was a huge Tupac fan growing up. And like, to the point where like I wouldn't listen to Biggie and Nas and Jay-Z. Like, I didn't listen to that stuff till later. And like, now I'm a huge fan of all of it, obviously. But I mean, I wouldn't listen to anything else. And then he passed away, and then Eminem came out, and it was just like, oh. I mean, I listened to Bone Thugs. I listened to
Right. It was like a resurgence in a sense.
But this was different, man. And this was a white dude signed by Dre, like saying insane things, like just insane things that nobody else was saying at the time. So yeah. And just his wordplay, his being able to flip words and bend words, and
his rhyme scheme is just phenomenal.
So yeah, hearing this album for the first time was mind-blowing, because even after the first album, like, I was a huge fan, obviously, but this album was another level of like, oh, he's like serious. Like, usually like they kind of fall off on their second album a little bit, and then the third album, right, they're kind of, you know, by the fourth album, somebody's like around by their fourth album, you're like, oh wow. No, he was still going crazy.
Going hard on his songs, though, too. Yeah. Like, he didn't hold anything back. And this is also, of course, after the Marshall Mathers LP, this is his third album. The first album is, of course, is Infinite. But for me, yes, it depends on how you listen to Eminem and where you were introduced to Eminem. Sure. This could be his second album, because everybody's known after the Slim Shady LP drop, this one came out. a year later.
Yeah, see, so, I never knew about Infinite back then. I knew I knew about Infinite, you know, now. I obviously have heard it many times, but yeah, I didn't know about that. So technically to me, this, or not technically, but this to me was the second album. Yeah.
Same. That's how I viewed it. It's like, you know, another thing too is I remember, you know, everybody was bleaching their hair at this time.
Yeah.
Like nonstop. I was even on
I was in my bathroom basement in the sink with peroxide just pouring it on my head. Yeah.
Now my question was this, Don. When you were dyeing your hair blonde, did you have Stan blaring in the background?
Yes, I had.
Writing a letter to Eminem?
Of course. Well, no, I wasn't writing a letter to him, but no, yeah. I wasn't quite like that. But yes, I was definitely a huge fan, like, yeah. For sure, if I would have.
Right. But you see, though, with me, though, I really enjoyed this album because I could relate to it and things like that, too.
Yeah.
Like, I was bullied in high school. I was actually one of the people, an outcast in high school, and he targeted towards me. And I also the fact that, he is rapping about stuff that, and like he says, I have the balls to say it while you guys don't have balls to say it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are great lyricists from that time period. We have Biggie, we have Pac, we have Jay-Z, we have Nas, we have all these really great rappers, and they all were, but they were all for the most part talking about the same, you know, growing up in the streets in either New York or LA or, you know, wherever they were from, selling drugs, you know, that kind of stuff, women, cars, money. That's what they were talking about. Eminem was like, no, I'm just gonna say I'm gonna murder my wife. Like I'm gonna make a whole song about murdering my wife.
Right.
Like, that's just what he did. Like, so it was insane.
Here's the thing, though. I think the reason, too, why he had to step out of that element that everybody was known for was because he didn't come from that neighborhood.
Yeah.
He had to find out a way.
Said that, yeah.
Right. He had to find a way to actually relate to people in a new kind of context, a new kind of way. So he did what he knew. He got bullied. He made
Eminem
fun of the way
was
he got
an insult
bullied.
Comic that became a rapper instead. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he's very comedic. He's very insulting to people. He doesn't care. He will insult anybody at any time. And he's said in many interviews, like, I only say these names because they rhyme with what I'm trying to say, or they fit somehow with what I'm trying to say. He's like, most of these people I don't know. He's like, I don't really care. I just don't.
Right.
You know, it's just funny to me to say Instinct's gonna come to kill NSYNC. Like, that's just funny to me. He's like, I don't know what to tell you.
But, you know, okay, so let's go into the track listing of this. Okay, so we have the public service announcement of 2000, which followed up with the Slim Shady LP that came out. So he does the public service announcement again, where basically we just kissed his ass for purchasing another album by him.
You have agreed to kiss his ass, and he doesn't get
And then he goes, any other words? Yeah, sue me. And then it goes into Kill You. So what did you think of the song Kill You when you first heard it?
I mean, what do you think? He's talking about, like, they gave me the Rolling Stone cover after he's talking about, you know, whatever with his own mom. Like, I mean, you know, I don't want to say, but it's, yeah, there's again, just that shock value. Like, I don't care. I'm just going to say it. And I don't really care. I just love that about him, that he, especially back then, he was definitely more free back then to say. He's like, I used to say it, so stop me now.
Right. Stop but not only now. That, though, but people tried canceling him back in the early 2000s as well for this album itself. But, you know, today, you can't cancel him. He has a huge fan, bigger fan base than what he did back in the early 2000s. So therefore, you cannot even touch him to be canceled.
Yeah, he's one of those untouchable. Yeah, for sure.
So that's the thing,
what cancel culture is. It's just people that don't have big enough followings to keep them alive afterward. Because if you have enough fans, people can say whatever they want about you. But if you have the fan base, you're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
So
I definitely like the song Kill You was okay for me. I mean, I liked it, but it wasn't one of those go two songs that I kept on repeating over and over again. The beat, the hook, and everything else was good. Then he was also, I like how he said, well, I'm the one who gave the Rolling Stone cover for. It's like, bitch, don't you understand who I am?
Yeah.
My second album coming out of the gate was me hitting my mom over the head with a shovel.
Yep.
And you're going to tell me that you're going to give me the Rolling Stone cover. What the hell is wrong with you? You're just as crazy and chaotic as I am if you're wanting to put me on the cover, but okay, I'll do it. You know, it's basically what he's saying. And then I also like, he's also rapping about Sonny Bono at the time, who got into a ski accident, banging into some trees. Then you also have him talking about Christopher Reeve, put down his legs.
Yes. Yeah. He was unfiltered and he was different. Mm-hmm. But the other thing was, he could back it up. like right. with his rap because he was good at it. It wasn't like he was just out there saying any dumb thing that like didn't matter. He really was saying like a lot of crazy stuff that was really funny. I mean, it was just really funny.
It was the way he the comedic timing with his rhymes is why you're even in tune with it. Because if sure. it came from anybody else, they would be like, "What the hell am I listening to?" It would be immediate shut off. But the way he does it in a sense of dark comedy, it works. It balances itself out a lot.
Oh, it does. Yeah, because you can't really like. It's so hard to be mad at a person like that because you know they don't mean it. Like, there's no way you can say these things and actually mean it. I mean, exactly. You can, obviously, but you know what I mean? Like, one person to say all these insane things, like, publicly, like, it's so hard to be mad at the guy. That's why it's so easy, like, for me, it was for me, to just see it for what it was, just the comedy of it. He loved making people laugh, like, and just saying insane things. Like, he says it in one of the songs later we'll get to, but, you know, I just say these things, I make them up to piss you off. Like,
exactly.
That's it. Like, that's it.
And then you have Stan, which is now in a dictionary now for a crazed fan. And who would actually thought to be the person he's writing about a crazy fan that is a huge Eminem fan. And then he winds up killing his wife who's pregnant. And then Eminem now responds back over to Stan in a letter. I love that whole entire deal where it has like really messed up psychology with it of being obsessed with something and nobody else understands you being close to being a fan of something to the point where you want to be like them, you want to get the same tattoos like they do, and then you go off the deep end.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely people like that back then, for sure. But yeah, I think this was written as not to one person, but to a, like just, you know, that insane, like insaneness at the time. But apparently a cannabis thinks that it was written about him.
Right.
That's like the thing, a big like thing in hip hop is that cannabis, because they were beefing at the time, thought that he wrote this song about him or that he was like talking about him in this song. But there is one thing I want to say, and I think it's, I don't know if it's controversial or not, but I think it's true. Eminem is the best story writer in hip hop. Like,
he is. He's the best lyricist. The way he rhymes with his rhyme scheme, the way he's able to do the verbs, you know what I'm talking about? Like how he does the verbs and stuff. It's fantastic. Yeah. He even rhymed orange before. He did that. There's also some other stuff too that I wanted to mention, but you know, I think that hands down he's the best lyricist. He knows how to come at you to the point where you have to work just as twice as hard as he does at coming up with stuff. And it's hard to burn him when he's burning you.
Well, yeah, plus he's so self-deprecating anyway in his rhymes, so it's hard to kind of defeat somebody that is already going to tell you, yeah, I don't care that I'm like from Detroit and I was from a trailer park. Like, I don't really care. Like, you can say that about me, but whatever.
Well, the truth is he was never in the trailer park. He actually did live in a house though.
Well, yeah, but yeah.
But I get what you're saying. From 8 Mile, right, though, is where you're going off of.
Yeah, just because it's assumed that he like came from like, you know, probably a more urban
side of Detroit.
Yeah, and he just lived in like a normal like area. So it's, I don't know. It's just, I love that he's just so great at telling a story and being able to stay it. Like, there are many rappers that have told stories in their songs, but he does it so much. Like, he had mushrooms on his first album, you know, with hanging out with the girl going to rave. Like, then he has this, and he has Kim that's later on this album. And like, throughout his career, he's just written so many like amazing story songs, and it's hard to do.
Well, that, even the Marshall Mathers LP one that he has, he wrote a sequel to Stan.
Yes.
And it's about his brother sneaking into his own house, into Eminem's house, kidnapping him and killing him the same way that Stan killed himself.
Yes.
And everything. So I thought that was actually a pretty good thing. Everybody's like, oh, he's talking shit about the Broncos. I said, no. If you pay attention to the details within the song, he's talking about the fact that Matthew is now getting revenge for Stan because of the fact, remember, he was outside in the stadium waiting for M to sign his Broncos hat, and he waited on the blistering rain, and he just said no. So that's where the idea and concept comes from. It's now Matthew's turn at the story of him trying to cope with Stan's death after all this time. So,
One of my favorite simple lines from Eminem comes in that song, too, because he's like,
which one?
Like, I reached my full potential. I peaked. When he's talking about going up to his window and looking for him.
Yeah.
It's just so simple and stupid, but it's so funny to me.
You know what, though? We might actually have to do an Eminem Marshall Mathers LP 2 review to follow up.
I love that.
Because, I really like that album, too. Yeah. But, okay, so you have Dio on the song, which he's sampling with Thank You.
Right.
You have the...
One of her songs, right? Huh? That's her song originally, yeah. Right? That they remixed for Stan,
Yeah, they sampled it for Stan. And also, too, this has like a cinematic kind of vibe to it. It feels like a movie.
Because when you're watching a video, it's a movie for sure.
Right. but on audio CD, and they're bringing it into with the thunder sound effects and adding more into it. Especially when I'm on the freeway right now. Dare Me to Drive, Fifth of Vodka, Dare Me to Drive. And then you hear the sounds of everything and you're just sucked into this wondering what's going to happen with Stan now. And I just think and it's very relatable in today's time, especially when someone gets so obsessed with something, even if it's not a fan of a music artist, you're obsessed with maybe an actor or a movie or something to the point where you go on this deep level to where it just overtakes you.
Yeah. I completely agree, man. This was an experience, like first hearing a song like this song, because at first you're like, wow, what is going on? You know what I mean? Like, you know what's going on, but you're just like, holy crap, where is this going? And I think what's most important about this song is his verse back to Stan, because that's when he becomes Eminem and not, you know, Slim Shady or Marshall Mathers. Marshall Mathers, not Eminem.
Yeah, he becomes Marshall Mathers and explaining to Stan, hey, look, man, I just say this shit to be funny. I don't mean anything.
I'm just crowded, dog.
I just hope this letter reaches you in time because I saw some crazy shit on the news
a couple weeks ago that made me sick. That line is key because even for all the craziness that he says, that kind of stuff still makes him, he's a person, like he's a human being. Like, just because somebody hasn't, like, do you, like, hate a horror director for coming up with gruesome deaths? No, you love it because that's their job. Like, Eminem is doing it. He's doing horror rap in a way that's, you know, it's crazy and it's out there. But he's not doing anything, like, out of the, you know, like.
Ordinary. Box. He's there to entertain.
Right. Yes. Right. And it's, you know, but it's very beautifully done the way he brings himself into that song finally. And we really get to see the first glimpse of who he is as a person.
Me too.
Obviously, you know, interviews we've, you know, before that. But, you know, back then it's hard to remember all that stuff because it's all gone now.
I still remember some of the VH1 stuff that when people were talking about him, and then Snoop Dogg saying, man, he got a song about killing his wife. How many people think about doing that? I'm like, wow. But just the dark humor of how Snoop said it. I hear you, dude. I hear you, Snoop. But no, so now we're going into the skit, another skit.
Yep.
And that skit is Steve Berman, where he goes into Steve Berman's office. He goes, hey, Steve, what's up, man? What's going on? He goes, how's everything going? He goes, man, I wish that you didn't give me anything to begin with. This record is less than nothing. I'm getting all, I had someone told me to shove my record up my ass. Do you know what it's like to have someone tell you shove a fucking record up your ass?
Yes.
He goes, here, take it back. Gee, okay, I'm sorry. And so next thing you know it, that's when you have the Way I Am. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the lunch line, all of us singing that on top of our lungs, waiting to for our lunch.
After the Stan is who knew.
Who knew? Okay, yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry.
Yeah, you're skipping ahead just a little bit, but yeah, no, it's still
No. It's actually The Way I Am. The Way I Am is, I thought, the way I'm looking at it, or am I looking at it wrong?
I'm looking at it on YouTube, so it might be out of
order. Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, after Stan, it's Paul. Okay.
Well, it's the skit, and then who knew? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, let's go with Paul. You go in with the Paul skit then.
Yeah, Eminem was amazing at this stuff back then. Like doing the skits of like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Like this was another one of those skits that he was like, the Steve Berman is what he's talking about. This is less than nothing. But the Paul, wait a minute, I'm not remembering what the Paul one is now.
But yeah, that was just the Steve Berman one is actually the wasn't no. I don't remember.
Yeah, because Steve Berman is he's the one.
All right.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. Go on. So you were saying about Steve, about the Paul skit, though?
Yeah, it's a quick voicemail from from Paul Berman about the album and how it's just, he can't put this out because of how bad it is and how crazy it is. He did this in the first album too, I'm pretty sure, or something like
that. Yeah, he did the skits in that album though as well.
Yeah, and this was one of the things that Eminem was known for back then, was the accents and the skits and the, you know, just craziness. So, but this one's a funny one because it's an actual voicemail, I think it's a real voicemail from what I know.
Yeah, it's a voicemail that he leaves him.
Yeah. So that's funny because even back then they were just like, dude, what are you doing? Like, we can't put this out. Like, we can't put this album out. I just love it.
And then we get into Who Knew. And it goes into the whole point of the fact that he's like, he's saying who he is. He goes, I don't do black music. I don't do white music. I make fight music for high school kids. I put lives at risk when I drive like this. I put lives at risk with a knife like this. So he's actually telling you who he is and what he stands for. And if you're thinking that he's just another carbon copy of another rapper and everything, he's not.
No. Yeah. Just crazy, crazy lyrics, like, of him just coming in and just being insane. Wow. Who Knew was probably, for me, I think it's my favorite song, even over The Way I Am on this album. I think this is my favorite song. There's just so much to it. And his way of bending words and being able to just insanely put words together, man. And yeah, I'm trying to get to the lyrics now so I can go through, because I'm trying to remember.
Then this other thing he says, I'm in the back seat of the truck with duct tape stretched out, duck the fuck that way down, waiting to straight jump out, put it over your mouth and grab you by the face. What now? Oh, you want me to watch my mouth? How? Take a fucking eyeballs out and turn them around. Look, oh,
yeah, that's the line right there. That kind of shit. I would just sit there and laugh at that kind of stuff for hours because it's so funny. It's so dumb, but it's so funny. But yeah, take drugs, rape. His way of being able to double syllable raps too, double and triple syllable, the take drugs, make like that kind of stuff. Like, I know it's really amazing how he could do that. But yeah, get aware, wake up, get a sense of humor, quit trying to censor music. This is for your kids to music. The kids, like. I love Eminem just being Eminem in that movie, or in this song, and in his lyrics, the way he's able to do that. And then the second verse, when he comes in with, who's bringing guns in the country? I couldn't even get a plastic pellet gun through customs over in London.
And you see, this is how you know at that time the media was still trying to do something with guns even back then.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't even get a plastic pellet gun through customs. And how does this happen? So it's funny, but it's also making you question the things that's going on around us, though, too.
Yeah. So, well, and that's the thing. Yeah. He shines a light on the world, on, like, you know, the United States. And he's like, look, I live here. Like, you can't lie about it. This is what's happening in the country. Like, either you're going to acknowledge it or I'm just going to talk about it and I don't care. That's the another great thing about Eminem. And I think he does it more now that he's matured, but he always was willing to talk about stuff that was going on, like in the media and pop culture, whatever. Like, he was willing to say it, and he was going to give you basically what the consensus view on that topic was at the time. Like, whatever it was, he was going to
Well, even President Clinton wasn't even safe either. Oh, he Clinton wasn't safe. So if, right, and everybody's going hell right now because of him ripping on Trump or whatever, but I'm like, dude, this is what he does. Bush wasn't safe because that's when the Eminem show came out. Bush wasn't safe on Encore or any of the other stuff. So this is, if you're upset with him, this is what he does. It doesn't matter, and he doesn't just target lefts or rights. He targets everybody.
Yeah, he always has. I think that's one thing he's been very consistent in his career on, is he doesn't hold back what he wants to say or has to say, or just, again, what he feels like is funny to say. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, if he thinks it's funny to say it, or if he thinks it's important to say it, he's going to say it.
And then there's,
and like, you're not going to like the way he says it, because he's going to say it the way it should be said, or at least he feels it.
Right. So. And then there's also that whole entire thing where, you know, about the 12-year-old daughter who you allowed your 12-year-old daughter to wear makeup. Right. And I remember back in those days too, where parents basically let the daughters do whatever they wanted to do and wear makeup. And meanwhile, you're going to get onto them for listening to an album or a piece of music. And he's like, which one's worse? So he's just like making you sit back and analyze yourself. So let's see here. So Then we also got, after that one, we have the Steve Berman skit. But with the Paul skit, I just want to mention this. This is what the skit was. It was basically the voicemail goes, "Hey, Em, I have something I need to tell you about your album." He goes, fuck it. Because it was just so controversial within that whole entire thing over there. So,
yeah.
But yeah. So now we're getting into The Way I Am. I already touched on the Steve Berman skit. So... unless you have something to add to it.
No. Yeah, again, just a funny skit. That's hilarious. So, and just
and everything after it goes into, you're rapping about homosexual and Vicodin and stuff like that. And then it goes into him telling him to take a record and shove it up his ass. And then next thing you know, he winds up throwing the CD back at him. And then M walks out. Then it goes into the whole entire thing of The Way I Am. And this is where he's basically talking about what fame has done for him and how he's not ready. He thought he was ready for it, but he's not ready for it.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, this is, again, man, this is Eminem like opening up and just being vulnerable, really vulnerable, and kind of laying it out there on how he feels. And leave me alone when I'm in public, like with my daughter, like just leave me alone, like don't bother me, like I love every fan that I get, but no, leave me alone.
He goes, I'm in the bathroom and I can't even take a shit when and then he's also there's also that other line, he goes, I'm not Mr. NSYNC, I'm not what your friends think, I can't be a prick. So after so much of just taking it, you can snap, and that's literally what it is. Yeah, he has a success, but with that success, though, too, no one's prepared for that.
It's hard to prepare for that, man, especially when you've been, kind of dirt broke your whole or dirt poor your whole life, or, close to it, like getting all that success and eyes on you and people wanting to talk to you and all that. Yeah, that's got to be literally life altering. I mean,
right? How do you handle it? I'm actually reciting these things without even looking at the lyrics. And there's also this other line where he goes, I'm racing and I'm pacing, I'm tearing my hair out. And always, these Caucasians always coming at me with the same fucking questions. What school did I go to?
Yeah, that's the one, what hood I grew up in, and that kind of stuff. Right. Yeah, just the assumptions of who he is, too. And he's like, yeah, that's not me. I'm just me. Like, I'm just trying to be me.
He just wants to be able to live his life. He wants to have, it's like, okay, you go to the studio for a couple of hours, you put in your time, and then you clock out. And same thing whenever you're at a concert. He did his time. He wants to go on ahead and have his own family time away from everything else, because he's no longer on the clock right now. He's having his own personal time. Yeah. So that's how I feel about it. It's like, there's a difference between my work and there's a difference between my home life.
Yeah, and I think famous people, honestly, would be more giving with their time if it wasn't everything in your face all the time anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think if people would just be more settled, be like, hey, man, I just want to say I love game music and everything. Have a great, great day. And that's it. No, people like, hey, can I have a selfie with you? Can I have an autograph?
Yeah, right. And you have
can I have dinner with you while you give me an autograph? But,
Right. Yeah, no, it's hard, man. It's hard. I can imagine it. All right. I don't know if it's hard, but I mean, obviously, it seems like it would be very difficult to deal with fame. Especially on that level, because at that time Eminem was Michael Jackson. He was literally that big at that time. So
he was everywhere,
And obviously he wasn't as big as Michael Jackson, but you know what I mean. You say his name and you know who that is. Like there's very not many people that are like that.
Another thing too is like if you go back and listen to some of the people he was attacking NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, Christina Aguilera, and this is a very much a nostalgia record now. Because it just doesn't hold up as strong on the mention of the names and everything as it did back then.
Sure. Oh, yeah,
definitely. But for nostalgia purposes, it served its purpose back then. And the name drops are just shocking because you weren't expecting him to go for the juggler with it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But
when he named somebody, I mean, yeah, you were like, oh, is he giving us like inside information? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you really were like, oh, shoot. This might be happening.
Right. And then, The Way I Am is just the frustrations of his life of trying to cope with, this is what I have in my notes, of just him trying to struggle between the balance of fame and dealing with the balance of a family life, though, too. So
struggle. He had a big struggle with his mom, too, in court. They settled for the $10 million. She sued him for $10 million, whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And now they made up now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Right. But we'll talk about that later on or whatever. But then after that, we have the real Slim Shady.
Yes.
which is more of your fun, radio-friendly, more radio-friendly than Stan, because they actually did play an edited version of Stan on the radio, but this is where they got you with this song. Everybody knows
the real song. One of the biggest moments in hip-hop, too, because, or, well, in music, really, because when he walked into, what was it, Radio Music Hall?
The VMAs.
Yeah, with all those freaking M&Ms or whatever, like, dressed like him. Oh, my God, dude, that was one of the most insane things ever happened. Like, that was like, what is happening right now? But yeah, the song again fits that moment perfectly. The lyrics fit that moment perfect. But whoa, does he go crazy on this song?
Right? He does. He went after Tom Green, which was a big, huge commodity at the time with MTV. Yeah. My mama's on your lips. My mama's on your lips. If you just give it a little kiss, and this is the same things that we teach our little kids.
Yep.
And you mean to tell me that they don't know what a woman's clitoris is? Is his or hers? But they have the Discovery Channel, don't they? So, yeah, I like how he played off the narrative of that. Well,
when he comes in, he's like, y'all act like you never seen a white person before. Jaws all on the floor like Pam and Tommy just burst in the door. So her jaw was on the floor because Tom came in and she was like, oh, shit. Like, just stuff like that.
I'm at the nursing home jerking and...
Oh my God! Yeah, jerk, the whole bag of Viagra is at work.
But this song is just totally insane. And then there's also that one saying: "If a man and another man can't elope, then what's that one line that he says? I don't have.
Yeah, if a man and another man can't elope.
Yeah, that's pretty much
he's talking about. Oh yeah, hump dead animals. If some of us are cannibals, cut other people open like cantaloupes. But if we can hump the animals and antelopes, then there's a reason that a man and another man can't elope.
Yeah. Exactly. But I got the antidote. So with the real Slim Shady, please stand up. Yeah.
And then he gets into the Will Smith hate, which...
Yes.
I love at the time, because at the time everybody was, you know, gangster rap and, you know, so Will Smith not being like a quote unquote hard rapper. I respect the hell out of Will Smith now, but back then nobody cared about Will Smith. Like they really didn't as a rapper.
Because he's like, Will Smith doesn't have cuss in his rap, but I do. So I do. So fuck him and fuck you too.
Yeah. I just love that line just because at the time, again, just nobody cared and people were just like, oh, shoot.
Well, people cared, I think, but it was more of the fact that I feel safe letting people listen to a Will Smith record versus an Eminem record, which is more controversial. So there's that split between the two of them. So I think people did care, because every single time when you turn around, either Miami was playing, you also had Getting That's Jiggy fair. With It.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So he was popular, just as popular, but it's just the fact that he was like the good boy of rap, while you have Eminem, who's the bad boy of rap. And then you have that whole entire thing. Well, you better switch me chairs away from because of the fact, wondering who Christina and Britney gave head to first. Switch me chairs over to Carson Daly and Fred Durst. That's right. That's the way the verse goes. Switch me chairs to Fred and Carson Daly, so that way we can argue with who Britney gave head to first.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that was all because, so there was like this thing on MTV with Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera and something else, and they were doing like a slumber party. They were all like in their pajamas in a bed and like talking, and one of them apparently said something about Eminem being cute, and Christina Aguilera said, yeah, but isn't he married to Kim? And he got mad about that, because she basically, he was, as he was like, you put me on blast on MTV, like basically like, I'm trying to bang people, like why are you trying to tell my business? That's basically why he was mad about it. Like, that's literally how childish he was back then too, which I also love about him, because he was so childish back then. You could literally say nothing, like nothing insulting about him at all, and he would still be like, yeah, I don't like you now.
It was so now we actually have Remember Me.
Yes.
Which has RBX and Sticky Fingers.
Yes, one of my favorite rappers also. Great song. Absolute, in my opinion, classic song from this album. Again, Sticky Fingers and Eminem on this album. I don't really know who RBX is that much, but I love... So Eminem has a great verse on here, but I want to get to real quick. Sticky, so he says... he said, I've never been told, he said, take no for an answer. I've been told no, but it was more like no. I love that line, but then he's got the, life's a bitch if you met her, fuck it, fuck you if you let her become better than to be a competitor. The vet is ahead of the shit. It's all a Redditor. Like the way he is able to the rhymes in that part, I love so much.
Medic and so the cheddars and the cheddar. Stevie Vendetta with metal Beretta.
Yeah, settle Vendetta, the metal Beretta from ghetto to ghetto. But evidence, nope, never leave a shred of. I love the way it ends that rhyming scheme with that part. It's a great line. But yeah, to get to Eminem on this album or this song, this is one of those Eminem just kind of flexing and having fun with words, which I love. And
because him and Dr. Dre come in on the third verse. And it goes with, when I go out, I'm going to go shooting. I don't mean when I die. I mean when I go to the club, stupid.
Yeah.
That's basically how he's trying to say, like, he's like the most popular jock in school or something. Or like, if a Karen or a popular girl named Karen, she's like, I don't mean whenever I go out, stupid. I mean when I go out, stupid. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know,
I'm trying to clean up my fucking image. So I promised the fucking critics I wouldn't say fucking for 6 minutes.
Then he goes, my mom's a bitch, but made me an angry blonde, so I made a song, killed her and put a Haley on. I may be wrong. I keep thinking these crazy thoughts in my cranium, but I'm stuck with a crazy mom. Is she really on much dope as you say she's on? And I like how they have that, like, that little speaker box when he says that little line. Okay, so we were talking about my baby's mom made me a bitch, made me an angry blonde, so I made a song, killed her and put Haley on. I may be wrong. I keep thinking these crazy thoughts in my cranium, but I'm stuck with a crazy mom. Is she really much dope as you say she's on? So I like how they go with the speaker box kind of thing with it, as if his own subconscious is actually asking him.
The way he's able to do, especially back then, he doesn't do it as much now, but the ad libs and the accents and the overdubs and the, you know, all that stuff, he was just so funny at it. He was so great at it.
And then he actually takes I talked about this on today though, where I didn't realize how close to Columbine this album came out on. It was only a year, so people were still kind of trying to get over it. And here he comes.
This got him in a lot of trouble, just like kind of in the media in general. Like, this was one of those things where it was pretty bad for him for a while after this, because this is something that's pretty crazy to say, especially back then, like you said, within a year of Columbine happening. Yeah.
And the dust hasn't even been settled or anything, so he's rapping about Columbine.
Yeah.
And especially then they have to edit this out because of the fact that it was so controversial.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because even with an uncensored album, there was stuff that they still had to censor.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And this was definitely something they should have censored. Yeah. I think they were right for doing it at the time. But I think as bad as it is and as bad as it sounds, to me, it shows his lyrical ability like so much. Like, it shows off his lyrical ability so much, because of him able to be six dreams of picnic scenes, two kids, 16 with M16, the 10 clips each, like, the way he's able to it's really amazing how he puts words and lines and rhymes together, because
and he makes you see
actually,
it.
Yeah, but if you actually break down those like rhymes, he's rhyming four words at a time, like four words at a time, like over and over again. And it's like people weren't doing that with rap at the time. It was cat, bat, hat, you know, not literally that simple, but that's what it was. It wasn't a lot of double and triple syllable rappers and triple entendres and, you know, crazy easiness that he was doing with words. So
another thing too is I want to go back to the way I am for a second, because there was also Manson was also just as controversial as Eminem back in those days though too, and people were blaming Marilyn and for his lyrics, just as they're blaming Eminem for his lyrics.
Yes.
So Marilyn and heroin, I like how he did the rhyme scheme with that, and then of course we talked about Little Erica putting on makeup, so we talked about that part. But I just wanted to point out about how controversial Marilyn was at the time though too, and he was getting blamed for Columbine.
Eminem was one of the few that stuck up for him at the time too. That's another thing, like Eminem had his back with all that stuff, because he talks about, is it on this album or the next album, where he's talking about how like him and Marilyn Manson were like blamed for everything.
I think it was this one.
It might have
because
been
because that was in the way.
Yeah. But he actually was very supportive of Marilyn Manson back then, especially with the way the media was treating him, because they were doing the same thing to him. So,
And also too, I remember when people were trying to ban Manson from coming over to them, because they were saying, oh, he was torturing animals on stage and all that shit too.
Oh yeah.
And then up in Canada, they wanted to stop Eminem from coming up in Canada too.
I believe it. They tried to get him completely banned from music stores and stuff at one point. I mean, there was a bill that was that didn't pass that was going to ban him from music stores at the time.
Damn.
Yeah. There was a lot of craziness at that time.
But he also says Slim gets blamed in Bill Clinton's speech to fix the streets. Fuck that. PBT, you can vanish on volcanic ash. Yeah. And Reaper in Hell. Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Didn't mean it. We're trying to talk about it, but you can't actually say shit. It's like, damn it. I want to just talk about it.
No, let's see here. So, let's see. Yes, I'm back.
This is one of those crazy songs. Again, I think that he's just kind of flexing on more than anything, because a murder of rhyme, a word at a time. You never heard of a mind as perverted as mine. Like, just, again, the way he's able to just twist words and say things and say something. Like, he's not just saying words. He actually is saying stuff. So, this is the one too, when he's talking about Manson. That's Marilyn or Charles Manson. He was talking about that part. I forgot. It's Charles Manson, not Marilyn Manson.
But people think that whenever people are saying, oh, he's thinking about killing someone. No, it's talking about rhyming. It's talking about words can kill you. This is strong as a bullet can and ruining your career. That's what rap battling is all about. That's what battling is all about.
Yeah.
And he's like, you better get rid of that nines because you don't need it. It ain't going to help you. What's good? What's going to be good against a man who that strangles himself? I'm waiting for hell. Like, hell, shit. I'm anxious as hell. In hell. Manson, you're in the safe in the cell.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's him, man. It's just him again being raw, man. That was one thing he was always great at. Again, I mean, it's hard to really say anything else because that's just what he was, man. He was so raw at the time.
He went all the way hard on this whole entire album.
Yeah, I used to get punked and bullied on my block until I cut a kitten's head off and stuck it in the mailbox. It's just craziness. Because nobody would actually do these things. I mean, there are people that do it. Don't get me wrong. But you know what I mean? Like, he's just like, yeah, I'm going to say it. Okay.
I just get punked and bullied on my block till I cut a kitten's head off and stuck it in the mailbox. Hey, ma, I used to now I give a fuck less. What do I think of success? It sucks. Too much press. I'm stressed. Too much cess. Depressed. Too upset. This is what you're talking about with the rhyme scheme on that.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. Again, because if you compare it to what was being done then by other rappers, he was different. He just was very different. Most rappers had like a style and a cadence that they stuck to every song. He would change cadences, change rhyme schemes mid-song sometimes, or like song to song, and just he is an encyclopedia of rap and how to rap.
He definitely is. And then you also have I take an individual degenerate's head and reach into it just to see if it's influenced by me. If he listens to music, if he feeds into this shit, he's an innocent victim and becomes a puppet on the string of my tennis shoe. My name is Slim Shady. Anything else you want to add as far as I'm back?
No, I'm just kind of going through the lyrics just to see if anything really sticks out. But yeah, I mean, Ken Kniff reference is always funny because Ken Kniff was hilarious back then. Slim, for Pete's sake, put down Christopher Reeve's legs. Can't leave that out. Yeah.
And once again, he talks about Columbine in this song.
Yeah, he does. Yep, he does.
This is the song that they edit.
Yeah, at AK. That's the one he references in part two of this album.
Uncensor it.
Yeah, I'm standing all in a line at an AK-47, a revolver, a 9, a Mac-11, and all. Problem. But again, that's just I see the problem with it. I see all the like badness in it, but I can't help but be amazed by how he puts words together and says things. Like, I just can't help. A revolver, a 9, an AK-47, a revolver, a 9, a mecha, like, and it all fits, it all works, it all makes sense.
Right. Then there goes, and by the way, NSYNC, why do they sing? Am I the only one that realizes that they stink? Should I just dye my hair pink in reference to pink and care that y'all lip sync and buy a bigger size of earrings? It's why I tend to block out when I hear things. It's just crazy on how ahead of his time is, because now everybody has huge ass earrings.
Yep.
And also he mentions pink, but him and pink have a very good relationship at collaborating.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Because he was controversial too.
Well, I think too, a lot of people understood. I think there was a lot of people that understood Eminem and a lot of people that didn't. Like, you know what I mean? There was a lot of people that got the jokes and were just like, that's funny. And people that were seriously offended by him. Like, there just were people that were seriously offended by
him. Right.
Which, again, sometimes I get why they were offended, because sometimes he went too far, but it was always funny. It was always funny.
Yeah. So let's see here. After that, we have the Marshall Mathers song. This one was deep.
Another great song. Yeah, this is one of those songs. Let me see. Let's pull air song, because this I think is the one. Yeah, this is the crazy one. I just don't get it. Last year I was nobody. This year I'm selling records, talking about all that stuff, and then the
he's just going through in his head, right?
Yeah, but this one is definitely an Eminem flex song. So you might see me jogging, you might see me walking, you might see me walking a dead Rottweiler dog with a head chopped off and chopped off in the park with a spiked collar. Holler at him because the son of a bitch will quit barking.
Right. I'm up to then, block in the car that shot pocket pack. Yeah,
looking for Biggs killers, dressing ridiculous blue and red. Like, I don't see what the big deal is. this is the stuff that I loved back then, man. Hearing like just insaneness of how he was, because again, just doing something different, not being like everybody else, and saying crazy things, man. But it was always fun, man.
It was.
Yeah, Chris Pop watches. I just sit back and watch and get nauseous. Yeah, like, man, his wordplay, nauseous and wristwatches somehow rhyme.
And then also too, he talks about Backstreet Boys on this too, and anti Backstreet and Ricky Martin, whose instincts to kill and sing to get me started. These fucking brats can sing, and Britney's garbage. What's this bitch? Yeah, can give me back my $16. All I see is sissies and magazines smiling.
And then he goes on. Whatever happened to being wild? Whatever happened to wild out and being violent? Whatever happened to catching a good old fashioned passionate ass whooping and getting your shoes coat and your hat? Like, that's a great line. It's funny, but it's great. It's so funny because what happened to that? Like, just get your ass whooped.
This is also another thing too. Remember when we were talking about how Rolling Stone gave him the cover?
Yeah.
This is him lashing back at them because it was, and next thing I see is a picture of him at big white ass. XXL.
Yeah.
And now you shouldn't have a problem with it. My albums shouldn't be so hard for you to sell.
Great stuff. And then he goes into the, I don't want to talk about it, but he goes into the Insane Clown Posse beef that he had a little bit. There's a lot of unsavory things that he had to say about them, we'll say.
Yeah, and then he's also talking about his mom again, suing him for 10 mil.
Yeah, he's always talking about his mom at this time. That was one of the big themes at the time. So they talks about something that he talks about later in his career, but you know, he kind of brings it up here once and then really doesn't touch on it much, but about his stepfather and like what he did to him apparently as a kid. Right. So yeah, there's just so much, man. It's so much to take in because it's not like there's a throwaway line in here. You can literally go through line by line and pick something out that's insane, really? Like worth, or at least worth mentioning and talking about. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, because this is basically Slim Shady now taking over.
Yeah. Oh, this song for sure is Slim Shady, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. This is Slim Shady all over it. And especially with now, it seems like everything else was like Eminem processing everything, having a good time. There's some serious moments. And then once you get into like the bottom part of the album, it's nothing but Slim Shady. This is where his alter ego takes place.
Yep.
You know, that's how I looked at it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. He would just slip in and out of it too sometimes. So, yeah.
Because now you have the, after that, you actually have another Ken Kniff skit.
The Ken Kniff skit. Yes, this is the Insane Clown Posse one, right?
Yep, the BJ skit.
Yep, I know. Yep, I know this one very well. Unfortunately, I don't know it very well, but I know it.
Then we have the drug ballad. This is actually one of my favorite ones.
I love this song. I absolutely love this song. I'm not gonna lie.
It has that old school songs. 90s kind of hip hop flavor to it with the beat and the hook. Yes. And I like how he mentions Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, back when Mark Wahlberg was Marky Mark. This is Mark. How we used to make the party start. We used to mix in with Bacardi Dark and then we mix in. Oh my God. You love this song, man. Again, just the way he flips words and just says things is insane. Get the party start. mixed in with Bacardi Dark. It's crazy. Harley Drug Talk, Ballad is, Bacardi Dark. That's yeah. all I gotta say. Harley Talk and Bacardi Dark rhyme.
But yeah, man, this was also another one that was just a good party vibe to it, because it, yeah. he wants you to take you back to the time that he was partying and what he was doing. So this is like a flashback into his life before he was famous.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then Earth Calling, Pilot to Co-Pilot, looking for life on this planet, sir. No sign of it.
Because he's so high and messed up.
I might die if I go by it. Well done. I just love it. So funny.
This album still bangs. I mean, I'm seriously, this is such a banger.
Oh. I just vanished without a trace. I'm going to a pretty place now where the flowers grow. I'll be back in an hour or so. Talking about doing DMT, I think, right?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
So, third grade, all I used to do was sniff glue through a tube and play Rubik's Cube. Steven on the first chick with the hugest boobs. Like, come on, man. Like, he's so great. He's so funny. It's stupid. It's so great.
It really is. Yeah. So next we have the Amityville song, which basically I like the play on it because Amityville is not the Amityville horror, but for him right. in Detroit, it's Amityville.
Yes.
And he's playing off that key of Amityville. And all the stuff that he would do in Detroit and stuff like that, too. And this is also another play off of the Insane Clown Posse in this song, too.
Yes, definitely.
And this is all, by the way, I want to mention this. This is actually the introduction of Bizarre. This is also the introduction of D12.
For sure, yeah.
So you have that. I mean, without this album, you wouldn't even know who these guys are. This is like a year after this. Is you have the D12 Devil's Night album that drops.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Here in Bizarre, again, another person rapping insane, just going a little crazy. Some of the stuff he definitely talks about in this song is
we can't even touch that. We can't even talk about what he's.
But yeah, he's kind of rapping like Eminem. I mean, he really is. He's just going. He's saying some really crazy things, and you know, he's not the best rapper, but Bizarre is always fun. He's always funny.
He's always fun to listen to. Yes, be honest with you.
Yes, I love listening to him because he is fun. He does bring that, like, you know, just crazy vibe to it, and his charisma is there. You could tell, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, but there is one thing I want to talk about on Eminem, and this I really love is that's why we don't call it Detroit. We call it Amityville. You get capped out for just having a cavity filled. So that's why we're crowned the murder capital still. This ain't Detroit. This is Hamburger Hill. We don't do drive-bys. We park in front of houses and shoot. And when the police come, we fucking shoot it out with them too. Like, I just love that. I love that bit right there. It's just, a funny way to get the point across. Because again, like you said, this song's about Detroit being Amityville. You know, like his horror and his, like, you know, so.
In his state of Michigan.
Yeah, where he's from.
So, and also too, this is also, like I said, about Bizarre though. Mm-hmm. I like how Bizarre makes a little joke of the fact is, you know, he ends up saying this. Guess who Slim Shady just signed to Interscope? So basically he's making the announcement of, I'm just as crazy as M is. And it's crazy to think that I'm now signed with Interscope. And you're going to hear more from me and just be on the lookout.
Yep. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So I like that. Then you also have him talking about how the city is filled with a bunch of idiots, how much, just all kinds of stuff. It actually paints the vibe of Detroit and where he's from. And it's about, like you said, he's writing about where he's from and what he knows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I like how it even has like that a slow hip hop kind of horror vibe to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really cool vibe for a song. I agree. Because it does kind of slow down and give you like a horror movie type vibe, like a song you would hear in a horror movie. Yeah.
Right. And it's also depicting, of course, the regular Amityville horror movie, though, too. So he's playing the narrative off of that. Next, we have Bitch Please 2 featuring Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Exhibit. This is hands down my favorite song on the album aside from Criminal.
Okay.
Because this is the beat for this is just insane.
Yeah.
The lyrics flows really well between all of them.
Yeah.
And even though people were making a big deal, this is Snoop Dogg's first appearance with Eminem, I'm like, no, it was Bitch Please 2 that was actually with Eminem, unless they went on ahead and just sent the track out for Snoop to be on it and they were never in the studio together. That would be the only thing that I could think of.
I mean, that might have happened, but who knows? I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But this song is just nuts.
Oh, it is. It's yeah.
You got LA rappers with a Detroit rapper on this album.
Yeah.
We have, I love it.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I like the way that Dre is able to give, well, and again, I don't know if this was one of the songs. I don't know if Eminem was writing for Dre yet, but
I know they produced this album together, I think.
Yeah, but well, like Dre had ghostwriters, like everybody knows it. He had people write most of his songs back then. Eminem started writing a lot for him after that, but like Jay-Z wrote for him, Nas, all kinds of people wrote for Dre. But I like this, the beginning, how he comes in. He's like, just let me lay back and kick some simplistic pimp shit on Slim Shit, start rising Limp Biscuits. But he talks about how they switched. They had like the same, like Eminem has the like mosh pit, like people, like white, you know, rockers, and like he has the Crenshaw, and how they right. all like had the same, or they switched fans basically. I like how he talks about that.
Me too.
Yeah. Because it's again, back then, Dre, like, saying this dude's legit was huge. That was huge. Like, you know how big Dre was, like, as far as a name was back then. So
right. And I like also too, they're also mentioning the fact where they're from though too, with Dre. Yeah. Because Dre and Shady and with Snoop Dogg, it's with Doggy Long Beach Westside.
Yep. Doggy from Long Beach. Yeah.
Then you also have a verse with Snoop Dogg and Eminem together.
Yes,
which is all really cool. Because who would have actually thought that Snoop would actually be on Eminem third album, you know?
Dude, could you imagine at that time? Yeah, like you're Eminem and all of a sudden Snoop Dogg's and Dre is on your album and you're just like, what the heck is happening?
Then you also have Exhibit X, who's yeah, also Exhibit was too, big at that sure. time.
Oh yeah,
way before Pimp Your Ride.
Yeah, he was definitely a better rapper than TV host.
I will say yeah.
that. Actually, I like Exhibit a lot, actually. I'm a huge fan of Exhibit.
Back in the Heezy. Give me the mic. Let me recite till Timothy White pickets outside the Interscope offices every night.
Yeah.
What if he's right? I'm just a criminal making a living off the world's misery. What in the world gives me the right to say what I like and walk around flipping the bird, living the urban like life like a white kid from the burbs, screaming at night, screaming at mom, that's screaming to leave, run away from home, and grow to just as evil as me.
Yeah, this is what you ought to notice being people to see that somewhere deep down, and these are human beings.
Human being,
and just can't be found. Again, just his way of saying things is so funny and so good. It's just really good.
It really is. Yeah. I can listen to this song on repeat like all the time.
Absolutely.
And I can never get tired of it. Same thing with Amityville.
I mean, this whole album, there's really only one or I don't even know if there's two songs that I would skip on a regular basis. Like, there's songs that I might skip, you know, just because I'm not in the mood to hear it. But there's not a song I skip because I'm like, oh, I don't like this song. Do you know what I mean? Right.
With Kim, though, it's one of those songs that I can't, that I need to skip.
Yeah.
Because I know I can't right. clear
I,
that.
Yeah, I just don't always want to hear that. But right. sometimes I will listen. You know what I mean? Once in a while. But yeah, that's not a song I want to listen to all the time, for sure. Right. At all.
Speaking but of again, Kim, let's talk about Kim.
It's an amazing song, and it's a well-written and lyrical song. It really is. But yeah. It's not something I want to listen to.
No, this is not a song I would listen to, but I remember my friend Ernie was dating a girl named Kim in high school.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he dedicated this song to her when they broke up.
Oh, that's the best. That's the best.
I don't know if that was the best move, but
oh, it wasn't the best move, but it's hilarious.
but yeah, he goes, dude, I broke up with Kim. I'm like, I'm sorry, dude, that sucks. He goes, yeah, want to hear how I did it? I'm like, okay, let's hear it. He goes, I played the song Kim.
That's the best. I hope I want the fact that well, I can't even get it out. Never mind, it doesn't matter now.
What? That you the wanted
boom
him.
The boombox scene. I wanted him to do the boombox scene. I think that would have been even funnier. If he like stood outside the window with the boombox.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been hilarious.
Right.
I couldn't get it out the way I wanted to.
Now, I did insult somebody in the foods class before in high school with an Eminem insult with Forgot About Dre. Because she was talking a mile a minute and I didn't understand what she was saying. So I went like this. Nowadays, everybody has something to say, but nothing comes up when they move the list. It's a bunch of gibberish. Some motherfuckers act like they forgot about Dre. Now, what did you say to somebody you hate? Ryan Green Violence you hate? And then all of a sudden, she just turns, looks at me, and walks away.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's hilarious. That's funny, man. That's so good.
I was like, I didn't know that you could rap that fast. I was like, and at that point, I'm like, get me some water.
Yeah, right.
But with Kim, though, this actually shows you that he has some acting chops.
Yeah.
Because of the anger, the emotion in it.
And he does all the voices. Yeah, he does all the voices.
Here, I'll scream with you. Ah, somebody help!
Yeah.
What's this guy's problem on the side of me? Whenever the 18-wheeler is blowing past him. And then he's also trying to contemplate how the investigation's going to go down after he gets done killing everybody.
Yeah.
If you think about it, this is like O.J. Simpson.
Oh, dude, yeah, this is total, like he's definitely thought this out before. Like, nobody can ever convince me that Eminem didn't at least think about doing this. Like, I mean, obviously he did because he wrote this, but you know what I mean. Like, he planned this out at some point in his head. Like, if I ever do it, this is how I'm going
to. And it starts off so sweet and everything. This is like a prequel to 97 Bonnie and Clyde, though. Definitely. Oh, look at daddy's baby girl. That's baby's baby, little sleepy head. Yesterday I changed your diaper, wiped and patted you. How did you get so big? Can't believe it. You're only two. Baby, you're so precious. Daddy's so proud of you. And then after that, it just goes.
He just goes. Yeah, man. Yeah. Oh, he's, my God. The way he lays this out. And again, it's, for me, I do like this song only because it is a great example of a story in a rap form, you know, rhyming form that I just think is amazing. I'm amazed by people that can do it. But the insanity of what he does, puts her through throughout this song is pretty off the wall. I mean,
there's no words that can describe it. Even whenever he did it in concert, he threw a sex doll into the crowd and had Kim's name on the doll. And he also had the Jason mask with the chainsaw and all that and it was like the Up in Smoke tour.
Yep, I missed it. I don't want to talk about it because I had tickets to go to that and was forced to not go by my mom.
Damn.
Yeah, tell me about it. Hold, tell me about it, dude. I was I did not like my mom for a long time.
I can see my mom like, where are you going? I'm going to go see Eminem. Is it that violent guy on TV? No. Is it that guy that I told you not to be listening to, mama?
Long story short, I'd already bought the tickets and I was leaving for the Marines in a week and we were going camping as a family. And I literally was like, I'm just going to go to the concert and then I'm going to come camping. And she was like, no, and forced me to sell them. Oh, I was so mad.
I would be too. Because you can go camping anytime. It's not all the time you get to see Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube.
Dude.
All those guys at their peak, in their prime, on stage.
I bought the DVD of that concert just so I could have it because I was so mad that I didn't get to go.
I came close to going because it was in Boston in the summer of 99, of 2000, So I was close to going to that.
Dude, to get to see Nate Dogg before he died, like, oh my God, it would have been so amazing. Oh my God.
So now we're going into number 17 on the track list of Under the Influence, which now features the Dirty Dozen, which is D12.
Yep.
And I really like how they go in, you can suck my dick if you don't like my shit.
Yeah.
You know what's funny though? My mom's family member, my family member goes, you really let him listen to that? And at first, mom was like, what are you listening to? I said, Aerosmith.
That's awesome.
I thought at first I got busted. Because let me see what you're listening to. So I switched it out to like Armageddon soundtrack.
That's awesome. Did you have one of like the 10 disc CD changers?
No, I had the portable CD player, but I wasn't near her. Just quickly did like a bait and switch type of thing.
Oh,
and
I know.
She's like, what are you listening to? I said, I'm listening to the Armageddon soundtrack. And she goes, what's that? I said, when I look, and I was singing like the Aerosmith song to her. Oh,
that's so great.
She's like,
dude, that's so funny. That's so funny. Well, you talked about your grandmother bought you this album. So I wanted the Sir Mix-a-Lot. Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Oh my God. CD, right? I remember when the music video came on for that.
Yes. My grandmother, not knowing what the hell that is, bought me the one before that or the one after, whatever. It had to be the one before that. Because she bought me the wrong one, the wrong Sir Mix-a-Lot album. I was so mad because I didn't have that song.
Oh, I guess I've been hilarious to tell you too. My friend Brandon and I, we wanted the new Chameleonaire CD that came out. We didn't know that Chameleonaire came out with like an edited album where basically he stopped cussing. So Brandon calls up Best Buy and he's like, "What the fuck is this?" He goes, "What?" Because I sent my demented mom. That's how he worded it. He goes, "I sent her over to get an album and it doesn't have any cussing." He goes, "Well, that's because Chameleonaire decided that he wasn't going to do any more cussing." Right then and there, he broke the CD.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
That is hilarious. I'm like, your mom bought that for you.
Yeah, right? That's so funny, though.
But anything you want to add to Under the Influence, or are you good on that one?
Yeah, I mean, Under the Influence is great. This one shows where Eminem, because Eminem always talked about Proof and how he, like, they would rap the same. So, like, Proof was very, like, ass crack, pass that, hash rats, blast cats, very Eminem-esque. And that's, like, how they bonded as, like, lyricists when they met. That right. They were, like, double-syllable rappers. And
also right. And it also shows them from the same neighborhood, goofing off and just being themselves and everything, too. So you got to see a different level of who he is, what Marshall is.
Yeah, I think, and Eminem's talked about this, so it's not something that I'm, like, you know, bringing up just to be, like, mean, but Eminem didn't really give them as good a big of a chance as they probably deserve. Like, Swifty McVay and Proof are actually really good rappers. They should have been more put to the forefront than D12, but he was so focused on trying to get all of them attention that I think a couple really good rappers got missed in that, and relationships probably got strained because of that.
Even in the song Stepping Stone, which is the Kamikaze album, he mentions it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He talks about it in that. Yeah, where I don't think he was doing it really. He wasn't being mean or doing it like, I'm better than any of you. He was just, I think, trying to spread out something that, you know, there wasn't enough talent there. So
he was just, I think he was also spread out himself to the point where he thought he could do it all. And he realized he's human and he can't do it all.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of rappers have that problem. Like Jay-Z had like Memphis Bleek and Beanie Siegel and all them. And, you know, it's hard to like be a, like the main person and have all these people around you that you want to like help but can't. So right. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
So I don't really have much to add to Under the Influence. It's a fun song. I like it.
Yeah.
But it's not my go-to. Like when I was like 16, 17, it was, because it was just a fun goof off song.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
I love it. But Criminal was always the one that I always went to.
Yeah. This song is insane. Yeah, this song is
like a callback insane. To the Slim Shady LP. Whenever he used to talk before he rapped, with the rain going and everything. Are you afraid of death? I don't want to die yet. What? You know, back in with that album, this one, he goes, people think what I say on record, they actually think I do. You believe that? Hell, I'll kill you too.
Yep. You know why?
I'm a criminal.
Freaking love the way this song. I love the
teacher,
way
fifth grade teacher. Yeah.
Yeah. The way he brings this in, like you said, with the talking and like, you know, being like, you guys really think that I'm like, do you really think that I'm this crazy? Like, stop. Like, just stop being weird about it. Like, just stop. And then he's like, you know what? Nah, you know what? If you really think that, then I'll kill you. I'll kill you anyway. Like, I'll just kill you.
My other favorite thing on there, though, too, is please, Lord, help these children.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Please help send them a brand new car. With a prostitute. Please
send me a brand new car to prostitute while my wife's sick in the hospital. Preacher.
Fifth grade teacher. Yeah. And he's just like, get it? I'm just checking the mail. Yep. Then he's also,
Well, there is a controversial song or lyric, but it's again, another great way of how he uses words, which we don't have to say it, but he says, and you can't stop me from dropping each March with a brand new CD. Like, just again, the way he uses words and the way he gets points across is funny. It is funny. It's again, now looking back, pretty messed up, but it's funny. It is. Because again, it's so hard to say because I hate the, you know, this was the time.
But yeah, I agree. And also too, in hip hop though, you use words like that too. So it wasn't meant to come off as rude. It's just part of the hip hop culture.
It was. It at that time definitely was. Yeah. It definitely was. But again, I just like the message there. Like, you can't stop me. Or he's like, you can't stop me from topping these charts, and you can't stop me from dropping each March. Like, you just can't. You can't stop me from doing it.
Right. But definitely a great album. I definitely love this album. And also too, this album also debuted at number one on the Billboard 200, staying up for 8 consecutive weeks, a significant commercial success compared to the release of the Slim Shady LP just the previous year. The album sold 1.7 million copies in its first week, which I was part of that because of my grandmother. Thank you so much. Which made it among the fastest selling audio albums in the United States. The album produced the singles The Real Slim Shady, The Way I Am, Stan, I'm Back, and Bitch Please Too, among other publications. Rolling Stone named it the best album of 2000.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's wrong. I mean, again, this is one of those albums you could just put on and let play. I mean, there's very few artists in any genre that's making albums like this anymore, let alone hip-hop. So
being real and honest to the artist and to the fans themselves.
And entertaining. I mean, that's what music is supposed to be, is entertaining. And he's so entertaining. If you just get past the like prude, you know, prudeness of everything like that he's saying.
Exactly. And then you also have Eminem considering naming, get this, I don't know if you knew this or not, but he was actually thinking about naming the album Amsterdam.
That's funny.
After, because you know why? He went after a trip to the city shortly after the release of the Slim Shady LP, in which he and his friends engaged in a heavy drug use. The free use of drugs Eminem observed during his time in Amsterdam greatly influenced his desire to openly discuss drug use in the music and inspired some of the content on the album.
It's got to be when he wrote Drug Ballad then, too.
Yeah.
You would imagine. I wouldn't be surprised. For sure. And it could, because also if it's right after Slim Shady, it sounds the most like Slim Shady, Drug Ballad and stuff like that. So,
right. Like I said, the first couple of songs, it's nothing but Marshall and Eminem. Then you get into the other stuff, which is your darker part of the album. That's all Slim Shady.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I agree, man. I agree. I love it. I mean, look, this is definitely one of his best albums. You know, if not the best, it might be the best album. It's hard to say because he has so many great ones.
That's true. He really does have a lot of good ones in his discography. Stuff like that. There might be some that are like hit and miss with songs on an album, but and maybe the album might not be as solid as this.
Right.
But you can't not admit that he is a great lyricist. And he has bars.
Lots of them. Lots of them. Just lots of them.
So that's going to be it as far as this review goes. Thank you so much for joining me, Don. This is our last show of December. So what better way to do than to wrap it up with a controversial record?
So we come back first of the year with part two then, right?
Right. That's how we're going to do it.
When they try to cancel, they say no.
But guys, this is part of our intermission episode. So happy Wednesday. And I hope that everyone has a great time listening to this on the road. If you guys can give me a 5-star review on wherever you guys get your podcast from, it would be greatly appreciated. And always until next time, guys, have a great and safe day. And be careful out there where you guys are traveling. And always until next time, guys, hump day and bye-bye. See ya.